Good morning and welcome to the second part of the show this morning. It's live Wednesday on The Real Network with the Gareth Cliff Show, Jack Motlanthe, and now Jack Devnarain. How are you, sir?
Good, man. Good to be here. Good to see you.
It's moaning a bit like when you got in here about, oh, it's so early and it's so cold.
I was just noting the time.
We do this all the time.
We do it all the time.
We don't moan.
Yeah, well, you guys are used to suffering and carrying on.
That's the problem with you actors. You just don't know what suffering is anymore. You expect to be paid huge amounts of money just for pretending.
You know what I mean?
Look, it costs more if I'm here in my personal capacity and not in a character.
No, I know. Listen, first of all, I've got to congratulate you. You have been fighting the good fight. Doesn't matter who the minister is, and I know that you are. You're getting a lot more, I suppose, attention, respect. You're getting the ear of this minister a little more than you did the previous one. Mm. But how's it going? I know that you're not just speaking for yourself when you speak to the minister, and you're trying to get some sort of fairness back into the game for South African actors. It always saddens me when I speak to people who are genuinely talented and the industry that they're in just doesn't take them seriously. And I'm very rude about actors a lot of the time. So you know I'm being honest when I say
you're right.
How's it going?
I'm really impressed with what the minister is saying. The fact that
this is Gayton,
Minister Gayton McKenzie.
Yeah,
he is a listener.
Okay,
I've been impressed by that. He does his homework. I've been impressed by that. Mm. And if there's stuff that I'd really try to condense all the different arguments, and I think you might agree. Part of the problem in the acting industry is that it's a rare thing for a serious actor to be able to present a serious argument. Hmm. There are a lot of people who are very emotional about this, obviously, because we're talking about our livelihoods, our careers, our futures, and our legacy. But ask them, what is the argument? And you'll get 20 different stories, and that is part of the problem. So over the years that we've been talking about actors' rights and the acting industry, I've had to be able to distill the argument into something that I can present to the minister, to parliament, to the international community, whatever it might be. And I've been able to do that. And that's what I've presented to the minister, and he got it.
Okay, well, let's just give some credit to you before we move on, because no one else is going to say this. Mm. So you're smart enough to be able to distill that argument. You're smart enough to be politically aware in a way that a lot of most actors, you ask them about politics, they're either going to say something really stupid, really uneducated, or they're going to say something that's just rhetoric. It's the kind of thing. It's the sort of comment you'd hear from a 14-year-old
or a bumper sticker.
Yeah, they say what they think will make them more popular, because then they think if they say something more popular, they might get the work that they're hoping for. Yeah. They don't really. A lot of actors are just saying what they hope will get them ahead. Mm. But you actually have, I remember the last time we spoke to you on the show, forgive me if I missed one in between, but I remember we spoke to you when COVID broke out and you were really worried about what was going to happen to your profession. But you had some super smart things to say about how dumb the whole idea of lockdowns were. And you were paying attention to what the politicians were saying, even though they were all up their own backsides and making no sense. And I thought, you know what? Jack seems to be one of those people who can actually fend for himself and for the people he represents in a smart, intelligent, and sometimes quite combative way, because you don't back down, which I really appreciate about you.
No, I thank you so much for saying that. And I realize perhaps the combativeness, the militancy has to do with a growing frustration where, when you're having an argument with somebody you really care about, the only time the volume starts to go up is when you know you're not being heard.
Mm.
And that's what it's been like for us.
We care about the
industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Could be one of those two, yeah.
Yeah, and often you could be losing because you're not being heard. So this is, I've had to be strategic in how I had to present my growing frustration. Mm-hmm. So it's useless just going out there and saying I'm really angry right now. But you got to change the story. You got to find a different way of telling the story. Come up with the same Red Riding Hood, but make it sexier. Hmm?
Okay, so what's the argument? I mean, why should the rest of us care about actors? I mean, we don't we don't care about plumbers until we need one, and we need plumbers more than we need actors. So why should we care?
Two reasons.
You were about to swear at me, weren't you?
I was about to expectorate.
Go did on. The no, mental no. mathematics. And I was like,
He's like, nah, I'm not going to say what, fuck you, Garrett.
Let's not do it.
Go on.
No, we've got to, firstly, the answer is that we've got to see this as an industry. If we were intent on keeping this as a recreation, as a children's pastime, then it really doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter what the minister has to think. It shouldn't matter what anybody thinks.
Mm.
But if we are serious about treating this as an industry, then we need to start regulating it. And we have to care about what actors are earning, the kind of content that we are putting out, which leads us to our second reason, is that we have to be keeping up with the rest of the world.
Mm.
What is the international community? What are the international best practices telling us? And where are we in reference to that? So if our industry is falling behind in terms of the rights of actors, we're falling behind in terms of keeping up with what artificial intelligence can be doing for us or against us, we need to be in the biggest conversations in the world as far as our industry goes.
Mm.
And if we're not participating in that, then we're falling behind. And I can tell you for a fact, we haven't just fallen behind the rest of the world. South Africa has fallen behind the rest of Africa.
Sure, that's bad. That's bad. So let me ask you this. What is the state of play for most actors in this country? The best job you could probably get in this country is to be in a soap because it's like regular income.
Yeah.
What kind of money are we talking about? Because most of the people who watch these things assume that these actors and actresses are earning enough to live.
Mm.
And you and I know that the truth is far from that. They're actually earning a pittance. It's barely enough to live.
Yes.
And those are the ones who have regular income.
Yeah.
They're not the ones who are depending on like one commercial every 3 years or something like that.
And then you pair it with their social media presence. From the outside looking in, they look fine.
Yeah. Social media can be very misleading.
Mm.
Often an actor can be cast because of their social media following.
Right.
Mm. So a big following means that I've got to work less as a producer to promote my show, because I've got the guy right here who's going to promote, you know, perhaps out of a contractual agreement or out of vanity, he's going to post all his stuff on social media. I've already started to develop my audience before my show is even released.
Right.
So to answer your question, Gareth, the reality is that maybe about 5 to 10% of our total acting population are involved in soapies and telenovelas right now.
Yeah.
And that kind of, it relates to the kind of percentages that exist around the world, looking at the same kind of number of people involved in regular work. So the vast number, the absolute vast number, 80 to 90% of actors in any given country at any given time are out of work.
Do we still divide people up as actors into theater stage actors, screen actors as in television, and then movie actors? Is that still the division?
The distinction is important not for acting purposes, but for
pay.
For medium, you know, the medium that you want to talk about.
And pay.
Mm. Pay, yeah. Contracts, yeah.
Right.
So that's, otherwise, any actor, and you'll see this happening a lot in the US and the UK, some really, really well-known film actors still do theater productions even today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And here in this country also, you know, Nambita Mpumwana, who's also serving with me on the South African Guild of Actors, fantastic theater performer. She still loves going back to the floorboards. So for her and a lot of actors, versatility is an important part of your career. You got to be able to double up, do something on stage. You might score a commercial. You get into TV. And then you might want to do something experimental, maybe, you know, create a bit of content on social media. It takes a whole different kind of sensibility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what could the minister do? What could South Africa do to make our actors better, to create an environment where we would create more interesting stuff, where we wouldn't be falling behind the rest of the world and the rest of Africa? What would you actually practically like to see done? Like if you were at the controls, what would you do?
We need to get actors covered under certain aspects, certain parts of labor laws.
Do you not have unions?
No, we can't have unions.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah, we can't have unions. And the reason for that just goes to my earlier point. As freelance actors, we are specifically excluded from the definition of employee under the Labor Relations Act. The LRA, as we know, is that piece of legislation that gives us the right to unionize.
Right.
So as long as you are specifically excluded from the LRA, you can't unionize. You can't join a union, form a union, engage in collective bargaining. And we know how powerful collective bargaining is. And that's the starting point, Gareth. The first thing I would do if I was at the controls is that I would say, we need to give actors, as freelancers, collective bargaining rights, the right to form a union,
yeah,
the right to negotiate, their rates of pay, minimum contract conditions.
You're not actually asking for like taxpayers' money.
Not
you're
at
just
all.
Asking for like the same rights everyone else in every other job in the country has.
In every other industry, from mining to manufacturing, agriculture, corporate, freight, whatever, you name it, they're all regulated through unionization.
Tracy says, I've been following Jack on Twitter for years. He calls it as it is, his wits sharper than a sniper. So lots of nice comments
nice
for you.
Nice one, Tracy. Thank you.
I mean, I can't argue with what you just said.
Yeah. I think it actually blows my mind.
I think that sounds quite reasonable. I mean, I think our labor laws are really shitty in this country because I think that it's extremely hard to hire and fire people. It's extremely hard for talent to rise. It's extremely hard for companies to not have to hire 10 people in HR to manage all the various aspects of labor law, which is, by the way, always changing.
Mm.
We have labor courts. I mean, the whole thing is just an expensive and not necessarily very efficient business.
Yeah. Mm.
But the fact that you guys are completely left outside of that is, it just seems wrong to me. I mean, Carl says, it's supply and demand over quality. Who's watching Muvango over Breaking Bad? And I get that. But we're not even talking about the quality of production. That's not the actor's fault. The actors get called in to be on a show. And sometimes they don't have that many choices. If they're lucky enough to get to a show,
mm-hmm. yeah.
then they do what the director and the producers want them to do.
Absolutely.
They don't get to like come in and say, you know, I don't think that the set designer's done the best work here.
Yeah,
you get fired.
Yeah, totally. Also, let's look at those actors on Breaking Bad. That's a union production. All those actors are union members.
Mm.
So what are we saying? That South Africa doesn't deserve to be unionized?
Yeah.
Because somehow we make inferior content? That's nonsense.
Yeah, it actually blows my mind that it's taken this long. Oh, at least the fact that actors still can't unionize in 2024. Like,
it's bizarre.
This sounds like something that should have been fixed right from the beginning.
That's a fair point. And just to give you some reference to that as well, the Swedish Actors Union is 130 years old.
Yeah, but who knows a Swedish actor? I mean,
oh, no, you do.
Name one, I know.
you've seen them. Okay, come on. You must
no,
know that.
No, I don't know any Swedish actors. No. Wait, hang on. What about
isn't
that?
Isn't the guy who played Jamie Lannister from Sweden? I could be wrong.
No. Wait. Those Scandinavians, man, they got all there's that whole family of them. I cannot remember their surname now, but they've been in a whole bunch of movies. They're from Sweden. I'm pretty sure that whole family are. I'll try and remember who they are during the course of this conversation.
I'll get it as well. But again, the point is there is a culture of regulation, which South Africa also has. You must remember when COSATU came into being in 1985, it was one of the most powerful labor forces on the continent. And I suspect, if I can throw in a carefully considered opinion here, the reason we weren't regulated back then is because our sector wasn't generating enough work. We weren't keeping a workforce.
So they didn't notice you.
They didn't notice us. Right.
Mm.
Now, in the digital age, of course people are going to notice because now our content is exportable. You got social media, you've got movies, you got streaming. Mm. So all the stuff that we make now has become a commodity. Now there's value attached to that.
Right.
And you can't simply measure
the Skarsgårds. That's them.
Yes.
I don't know how many there are. There are about 10. But the Skarsgårds are all from Scandinavia. I think they're all from Sweden. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, this is we want to help to create that culture, which we already had and have, and bring it into the creative sector. Really shouldn't be rocket surgery.
Have you had to pay a personal price for standing up for these actors? Has it made your life more difficult? Are people who run these productions nervous of having you on board, or are they on your side?
I realize that people have become generally nervous of me.
Shame. I'm sorry. I know how that feels. I do. I know how that feels. It's not nice.
I feel terrible about that because, firstly, I always feel as if I'm speaking for the actors, but a lot of actors themselves feel nervous because they realize that they should be speaking the language that I'm speaking on their behalf. Mm. They've got to know if I'm being a standard bearer for your rights, then you at least have had to have a stake in making that flag. At least know what it took.
Good old days of when actors were also sex workers on the side? That's how they made most of their money back in the 1600s.
I wasn't there.
Well, it used to be a thing.
It used to be a thing, yes.
It used to be a thing.
Yes,
and actors were considered unacceptable, you know, socially. I mean, nobody mixed with actors. It was against the grain. So, I mean, oh, here we go. Those are the Skarsgårds. Look at them. What a family, huh? There's tons of them.
Yeah.
What a huge family. Clearly, they earn enough money in Sweden with their unionization be able to...
And you know, it's not even so much about money. The one thing I discovered when I went and had a meeting with the Swedish union is that they actually have a full-time attorney on standby at the end of a phone so that if somebody anywhere, any Swedish union member around the world was having a problem, it could be some abusive situation on set. It could be sexual harassment. Hmm. They can literally call the hotline number and the attorney at the offices will take that call.
In this country, they'll try and squeeze out what little you have left and try to make money out of it.
And you leave a headline in one of the big newspapers and then you might get a hearing.
Yeah, and then they're probably not even on your side.
Yes.
What do you think this new minister might be able to do? I mean, like, best case scenario.
You know, I can see in the few engagements I've had with the minister that he's all about having a deeper understanding and a different approach. Now, you might think that this is just the most superficial thing I could possibly say. Don't take it for granted. Minister Natim Tetwa himself, in the years that he spent in that department, still didn't know that actors are engaged as freelancers. When we used to take him our grievances, he actually made recommendations in writing that we should refer our disputes to the CCMA.
Unbelievable.
And if anyone who understands what a freelancer is, you know that we cannot go to the CCMA as a freelancer. So Minister McKenzie actually took the time to listen. And he likes the fact that he's a renegade and a loose cannon. He's a maverick and he knows it and he likes it. Because it gives him a certain latitude. It gives him a certain license to come in and sit with a different group of people and come up with new ideas. Although I did say to him at the last meeting, I said, Minister, I apologize. I don't have any new ideas for you. I've got old ideas, but you're yet to implement them.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine this might be difficult to answer, but like, what is the likelihood that this particular minister is the person that's actually going to bring about that change?
I don't know. And it doesn't matter to me because as an activist, I really couldn't care who brings this change, who brings about the change. Mm-hmm. I must simply apply myself to whoever's in that chair right now. And I've got a message for him and I bring it to him in all earnestness. And I've got a case to make for it and I can back it up with decades and experiences of all professional actors in this country, including the support that we get from the international community as well. So we understand that this minister has plotted for himself a political trajectory, which I really admire. He's an ambitious man and we support his ambitions. And we're saying to him, let us help you build that legacy in this department. Let us help you become the minister to effect the change that all your predecessors have failed at.
What has taken so long? I don't understand what the pushback could have been.
No, let's start with all those people who the department did pay for, because apparently they've released the list of recipients,
yeah,
of like grants from the Department of Arts, Culture, and yeah, and Sport. Who's on that list? I haven't seen it. And what do we know about the people who did receive money from the government?
I think the minister failed to analyze the data that's on that list, because the minister was concerned about people who are serial recipients, chronic recipients of funding through the department. And he's right. There are
some?
Yeah. Yeah, there are some. What the list didn't reveal, though, was who those people were and how much they received. The list was a massive data dump, and it didn't come with the analysis that we needed. We needed to see those people who make a living out of the political patronage that comes from people, sympathizers working within his department.
Mm-hmm.
He's interested in rooting out those elements, right? But the list itself was over 3,000 names, 72 million rands worth of COVID funding.
Wow.
Jesus.
COVID funding recipients.
72 million rand.
Yeah.
Because I remember when all of that was happening and there were some people really struggling and suffering.
Correct. Yeah.
Couldn't put food on the table, couldn't survive. There were people who killed themselves.
That's right.
It was that bad. And yet 72 million, it doesn't sound like a lot. It probably isn't if you divide it by the number of recipients, but it wasn't equally apportioned to each one of those recipients.
Not equally. No. And remember, that was the first tranche of what should have been 160 million rand in total.
Mm-hmm. In the budget is nothing.
It's nothing. Yeah, it's a drop in the bucket.
It's absolutely nothing. What the minister was really looking for, though, was the grant funding recipients, the people who are receiving grant funds for projects that were never delivered.
Mm.
That's what he was looking for. But he obviously started by releasing the list of COVID funding recipients, which wasn't revealing the same thing. It wasn't indicating the same thing. It wasn't indicating the rot and the corruption and the serial misdemeanors. It wasn't revealing that. It was simply revealing a group of people who said, we are desperate and we need to eat because we're in lockdown.
Right.
Are there any people who were just on the take during that time to the tune of way more than was appropriate for people who are trying to survive? I mean, like people who saw an opportunity to really take the money and run.
Yeah. We know who they are because we're in the industry.
Mm.
But the minister will have to be fed this information. And he's going to have to be careful and look very carefully at the information and the data that he is releasing.
Mm.
Otherwise, you know, we're just creating a false sensation out of this.
Sure.
We need to get to the bottom of it. And as we said to the minister, we support your efforts to clean up your department. We need it to be transparent and accountable.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be a strategy to it. You're not going to achieve that simply by saying, well, here's a list, figure it out for yourself.
Otherwise, you're just taking shots in the dark.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna move on from the acting thing just now. I know it's a big part of what you do, but I also think you have interesting opinions on so many other things that are going on. I've got cautious optimism about Minister Gayton McKenzie because he does seem to be a bit of a renegade.
Mm.
He wants to break the rules. He wants to do what's right. He seems to be paying attention to the information that he's getting, which is more than we've had from most ministers in this portfolio. Let's be fair. The ANC used to put like the underachiever minister in as Sport, Arts and Culture because it was somewhere where they could do the least damage. And they kind of just appeared at rugby matches and stuff like that. And I think he really has an intention to try and fix things. But it's a hell of an operation he has to take control of. Because, I mean, it's not just the actors. There's obviously a huge description, a huge category of things that comes under arts and culture,
heritage,
let alone sport.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's massive. So who knows how he's going to tackle this this monster. But I wish him luck.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. You know, it seems his entry point into figuring out that wilderness of complexity is he's approaching it as he does his own life, which is a young man growing up in a tough environment where you have to fend for yourself to survive. You got to be street smart. You got to know who your friends are. And when you make good, you got to bring those people with you.
Yeah.
That's the kind of sensibility I see in him as a man, and it's what he's brought into his role as minister, which is really interesting because he's not doing this for himself or for a political party or for a political ideology. He's doing this because he wants to do right by the people of South Africa.
How is acting going to be affected by things like AI? Because every industry is complaining about AI, or they're excited about it, but they're also a bit nervous because they're not sure that it's going to be all good. And in acting, I'm sure that there are ways that AI is going to impact that we haven't even thought of, that you have. Where do you see that playing a role?
I like that there's new technology like AI. And there's so many things that we can play with that just makes the acting profession better, makes content creation better.
Sure. Maybe even script writing.
Yeah,
that's possible.
Well, we know that the writers' union, the US writers' union, had a lot to say about that, and they should. The reason we are nervous, though, is yes, of course, there is that possibility that AI can be used to create a clone of me. And that's the beginning. AI can be used to create a whole new kind of performer that is purely synthetic, that's measured in, you know, in bits rather than in what they're worth. They don't need to have an ID book or a history.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was last year or the year before that, a friend of mine sent me a link. This guy made a 15-minute like short film. Purely off of AI, not a single human actor in it.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that means, though, for the actors, bad news, they've been replaced by
a computer.
No.
Yeah. And as always, the audience will decide whether this works for them or not.
Yeah.
So in that respect, actors are not too concerned. Why actors are concerned, and I'll give you two scenarios. The one scenario is where actors see that their contribution is now being replaced, that they are being substituted, and they're losing work as a result.
Okay.
Now, that concern is universal. So everybody in the US and the UK and across the rest of the world share that concern with South African actors. The difference is that in the rest of the world, through a negotiated forum, a negotiating forum, you actually have the creators of AI and the producers and the studios and the actors sitting together to decide, how do we give you the reassurance that you're not going to lose your job, that we can use AI to create an enhanced experience, to make our jobs better, to make content creation more affordable without people actually losing anything? That's the discussion happening there right now. So there are guardrails in place that will ensure that an actor will have to give their consent if you're going to use a clone of them.
Yeah.
And they will be compensated for the use of that clone.
Royalties.
The difference is that in South Africa, there is no such forum.
So in other words, if you have been, if your image has been used somewhere, tough. Really? I mean, that seems to me like that is properly unfair. I'm not always on the side of actors, but in this respect, I think that is horribly unfair.
Yeah.
And imagine someone using your image.
Yeah.
And they haven't paid for it, and they just keep using it in an ad or in a poster or whatever else. That should not be allowed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Imagine scanning the image of Hendrik Gele, the late Hendrik Gele, Shaka Zulu, and continuing to use his image in other productions without the permission of his family or without compensation to his estate.
I don't
estate.
Like that at all.
Yeah.
So, all right. I often get asked by people, I don't know why, because they think I'm in the TV business and you know, I've been in it, but I certainly don't know anything about acting. Young people who are genuinely passionate about this, there are lots of people who want to be actors because it seems like a glamorous career.
Yeah.
And it seems like something that a lot of people wish they could do. It's like a dream career for many people. And I don't know what to say to them. So what do you say? Because you're in a much better position to give them advice. If someone comes up to you and they are just in love with the idea of becoming an actor, and that's all they want.
Yeah.
What do you tell them? Because the reality is going to be a lot less beautiful than they think it is. And obviously they want some honesty from you.
Yeah.
But you don't want to smash their dreams into the ground. What do you tell them?
Yeah, well, not immediately. I say to them, I'm in the process of fixing something so that the day they step into the industry following their dreams and their passions, that they will be able to earn from it. Because my biggest concern is, as long as you've got this passionate new group of talented actors coming in, they will be prepared to take your job from you and do it for less.
Mm.
And they'll be happy to do it because they're getting the exposure, they're establishing a name, they're creating a body of work.
Mm.
But at the same time, it means that every time they do a job thereafter, they're going to come in at the lower rate. They will have to come in at a lower rate. And the person coming in 5 years after them is going to have to do that for less as well.
No. Mm.
So it's very difficult.
It's a race to the bottom.
It is a race to the bottom. And it's unfolding over years, which is very difficult to try to explain to somebody when they're coming into it today.
Right.
They're not looking at 5 years or 10 years, 15 years down the line. They're looking at today, I'm going to have my name on a billboard.
Yeah.
I'm going to be up in the credits in this amazing movie. They're thinking about now. And I've got to try and expand that perspective to say, yes, you'll have it today, but tomorrow you'll be dead.
Oh, my God. All right, so just don't become an actor, all right? There you heard it, Jack. So, okay, I want to read this news story to you. This happened yesterday, and you were there, apparently. Arts, Culture and Sport Minister Gayton McKenzie set out his program for the financial year, delivering his maiden speech in Parliament on Tuesday, the Minister of Sport and Arts and Culture, promising to reform the entire sector, particularly with young people in mind. He said, "The power of sport to transform lives cannot be overstated and needs to be done to ensure widespread participation." He also said participating in sport at government schools should no longer be a choice. So you've got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I would have hated that at school. We'll be reaching out to the Department of Basic Education to bring back physical education as a standalone subject at schools. It was when I was at school. I didn't like it, but I'm glad that I did it.
Mm.
So I think that's probably a good thing. What do you think of that, Jack? Both Jacks. I got to say, Jack Motlante, Jack Devnerain. Jack and Jack, what do you think of it?
Well, you know, I'm one of those people that waits for the pudding to get the proof. Like, posturing
in front of
people.
Or just eats the pudding and doesn't go to physical education.
Yeah.
Just sits there eating the pudding.
You know what I mean?
Never going for a run.
But like, honestly, look, there's certain things that just have to be implemented. I agree with kids having to play sport. Do it. It's a must. There's a lot of things that you learn about yourself.
Mm.
And there's a lot of things that you learn about life on the sports field, whether we like it or not. It's an important thing. But, you know, I take things with a pinch of salt when it comes to any politician. You remember I told you this?
But I'm asking you, would you like physical education to be compulsory?
It has to be.
Okay.
It's a must. And I mean, when I was growing up, there was a lesson blocked out every week. Like the same way I would go to maths or cards or whatever.
We had it twice a week.
At least once a week, you would show up with your white shorts and your house t-shirt.
Uh-huh.
And you would play baseball, you'd run, you'd swim, whatever.
Sometimes
the case may
they would just make you run.
Yeah.
Just out of spite.
You have to do it.
Or pick up stones.
It is a must. It's a must.
You agree with that, Mr. Devnerain?
I like it. I like the idea. I think it's a way of creating within the regimented school system the discipline to commit to physical exercise.
Mm.
If you don't introduce it at some level, it's very difficult to say you're going to pick it up from your uncle, you'll pick it up from your buddies in the neighborhood. It often doesn't happen.
Mm.
Often it comes out of there are several drivers at school. One of those drivers is, I want to compete with my buddy.
Yeah.
And I want to be better than him at whatever sport. I can be fitter and faster than him. Another driver is, I want to impress this girl.
Yeah.
You know, so I can flex and show her that I'm really into it.
Mm.
And I think, and I'm speaking from a guy's perspective, especially when you're coming into your late primary, secondary phase, you notice your body's changing. And you start to model yourself on certain icons and heroes. And you think, I bet I could run that comrades marathon thing, hey?
Yeah.
And it allows you an opportunity at the time that you're building or creating the building blocks of your life, your values and the things that are important to you. It allows you to set them early.
Also, then you can pursue them. I mean, listen, if you don't start getting fit when you're young, you start getting fat when you're young. Let's say, like, you might not want to get fit, but you don't want to be fat. If you start getting fat as a young child, it's very hard to lose that later on in life.
Yeah, and you know what? Kids these days spend more time indoors than outdoors.
Anyway,
make it compulsory.
Yeah.
Make them climb trees.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Plant the trees.
Well, he said some other things. So you were there, Jack Devnarain, and you saw the minister presenting his budget. He spoke about a lot of things. He spoke about formalizing spinning into a sport. He says that the spinning should be a recognized sport. And he spoke about important things like repatriating the remains of freedom fighters. He had an argument with the EFF about the old flag, new flag. I mean, we only have one flag in this country. I don't know why the EFF is still obsessed with that old flag, because they are.
Yeah.
But they have nothing to contribute anymore, these guys. It's like you're talking to people from 1996 half the time, and these are meant to be the young people, the EFF, not the ANC of old.
Yeah.
What else happened? Did I miss anything?
No. The spinning was is a really good one, because that's come up in the media. And I think what we were looking for was some kind of context for the minister to explain why spinning.
Hmm.
And it came out yesterday, which was okay. Very interesting.
What did he say?
And usually whenever it came up in the media, the minister said he wants to, you know, formalize spinning. Usually there'll be some chuckles and some derision about it. His explanation was revealing. He said when he attends one of these spinning events, he notices that the place is packed. There are communities, cars, people, kids, people are eating, they're brying, they're engaging, they have a network of people, thousands of people at the same time.
Yes, sir.
He says that's hugely important, because if it brings people together, then he says that's something that we should recognize. The second thing he said he noticed is that when these spinning events happen, there are fewer reported shooting incidents in the communities where these events happen.
Yeah.
Well, so you can't shoot people while you're spinning.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine it'll be that might be a new sport.
It's a good point.
And it's funny. It's funny. You know what? Like, I'm actually having a flashback. Interested. This is a bit of a segue, but like June 16, 2005, I was in Meadowlands.
Youth Day?
Yeah. I'll never forget. Like, there was spinning cars and whatnot at this. It was a dilapidated basketball court. So we're having the time of our lives until the cops showed up. I actually got hit with a rubber bullet in my shoulder.
Oh, wow.
So
more shootings in that case. There could be
shootings. Did it leave a chip there?
Right here. Yeah.
I can see the chip right there.
Didn't get you on the air like
that. No, it didn't get me on the air. I stood up and said, fart. But it was great. It was good. So the shooting does go down. It's just, it depends on who's pulling the trigger.
So, all right. He also mentioned the cops, Eclipse.
Yeah.
He mentioned how he wants artists in the schools so that they can teach kids art. I mean, this is quite, I think, progressive and thoughtful stuff from a guy who everybody kind of wrote off as being just a loudmouth.
Yeah, yeah. And I can see that he's actually given it thought. What he really likes about the job that he has is that he's got the freedom to implement a lot of these ideas. And again, it's not even about the spinning. It's about how do I make a positive impact for these communities so that they are focused on positive things and that they're not at each other's necks and involved in drugs and alcoholism and gangsterism and shooting. Mm. Let's get them involved in doing something. And if we can formalize it, then we've set goals for them. Now they can maybe go up to provincial level or national level, spend the money on the car instead of on the drugs.
I think that makes sense.
I think it's cool.
How much money does his department actually get? Do we know?
No, I didn't get that.
The total.
I didn't.
It's not a lot, though. I mean, he's not playing with the kind of budgets that Department of Basic Education get.
And I don't see that he would have been deployed to such a department with such a huge budget anyway.
No. All right, so anything that I left out that he said that you thought was remarkable?
Man, no, you did cover it. The thing about the repatriation of the remains of freedom fighters is an important one because, again, he sees himself as a freedom fighter.
Sure.
He sees himself as somebody from the community that's aspiring to, something bigger than himself. And he respects amazing thing that happened yesterday. Mom Lillian Dube was in the group, and she's such a legend in her own right.
I love that woman.
She was, you know, when she stands up to speak, it's like the lights come on in the room, and she was so complimentary, and she said the most amazing things about him, and she thanked the minister for all his commitment and hard work, and she says, I expect great things from you. And you could almost feel that it was an admonishment from a mother to a son. It was saying,
no pressure.
I need you.
Well, pressure.
Behave or else.
That's right. And he took that on board. It was like, you know, yes, I'm ready, mama. You know,
okay, good. This.
That's
good.
Great.
All right. You think that there are going to be any people who are very much against his agenda?
I don't see that happening. You know, the argument with the EFF was really lost in irrelevance. It wasn't important enough to be carried through. And everybody in the conference room that I was in watching this brief exchange just laughed, because it had to do with the EFF searching for something.
They're looking for meaning.
They really are.
I know that you are very politically astute, and you have spoken out sometimes to your detriment, but I love the fact that you speak out. You don't just hold back. We always know where Jack stands on things. And you have been vocal for the longest time, even when it cost you potentially jobs, reputation. There were people who were definitely arrayed against you at some point. There may still be. Mm-hmm. But how do you think we're doing currently in South Africa? How do you think that election went? How are you feeling as compared to how you felt a year or two ago?
I look at the adoption of the GNU and I see such enthusiasm amongst the ANC that it's really taken me by surprise. Yeah. I realize it was almost as if the ANC itself was looking for somebody to
please, we're sick of getting the whole blame us. Like, let's share the blame, you know?
Please, can somebody help me out?
I think they were desperate for, like, someone to come in and just help them shoulder the burden, because they weren't coping.
They weren't.
And they weren't saying it.
No.
That's the thing. They weren't prepared to say it.
They would never admit that.
If they had to admit that, they would also have had to admit their failures.
Yep.
Over 30 years.
Yeah, this way they get to look magnanimous. And correct. They get to look like, no, well, we're sharing power and, you know, this is the responsible thing to do, and we believe in a good transition into a new era.
That's right.
And yes, we didn't win an outright majority, but we're adult enough to be able to with others.
It's almost as if you're waiting for them to say, our loss in the elections has been a vindication of our position.
All right. So famously, you've also had some fights online. Have those calmed down a bit since the elections? Because there's not really, I mean, I see a lot of people who are full of vim and vigor at the moment, but most of them are feeling left out. They just, you know, like I suspect many of them felt with their own families, which is why they're so bitter and resentful. But I see a lot of people who are really getting along quite well. They're just those few who are still angry and full of bluster and fighting and all of that stuff.
Yeah,
but most people, I think South Africa's calmed down a little bit.
I'm just concerned about young people. I mean, young voters in their 20s and 30s.
They didn't go. They didn't vote.
I'm really concerned about that, because it's not as if they're less vocal.
They're mostly stupid. I don't want them voting. They don't help choose wrong. I guarantee you those young people would have chosen wrong. So I'm glad they didn't vote. I'll say it. There we go. Yeah. That's for the record. Mm. Stay away next time too, you slackers.
Well, now here's the concern. What are they learning? What do they
Nothing.
Keep?
They're stupid.
But we should be worried about this, Jeff.
No,
the thing is, I think they
keep them out of the election.
They're just genuinely disenchanted. Like, here's the problem. You've got young people that have access to a lot of information, not knowledge.
Correct.
And they take that information and they run with it. So it's very easy to feel like nothing will ever change if you are on Facebook or whatever, and the little updates that come up tell you that things haven't changed since 1994, or this law was enacted in 2003, but the implementation of it hasn't happened still. You know what I mean? Or even simple examples like the Senzo Meyiwa trial going on for a decade.
Mm.
They see all of these things and like, what's the point? Might as well just build my little life up wherever I possibly can, where I won't be affected by politics and all of this shit. Now that's where the mistake is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
I don't think those people are stupid, for the record.
Sure. But I'm just saying,
I think those people are disenchanted. I think that they've also got to learn that some things don't just happen overnight. Even though you can search for something and get an instant result. And even though you can pull into McDonald's drive-thru and get your burger straight away,
sure,
some things require time.
Yeah.
And time is what makes them valuable.
And participation.
I agree with a lot of their sentiments. I just don't agree with their conclusions they come up with when it comes to some of these things.
That's a wise conclusion.
I'm not mad at them necessarily. I wish they were a bit more active, but I get where they're coming from, is what I'm saying.
What do you think about it?
I'm just thinking that there must be something we are doing wrong if we have that number of people who are not plugged in, and whatever it is that they're learning, whatever instant gratification that they're looking for, is leading them down such a destructive path. And I get, we are in that era now where there's more access to more information than we've ever had.
I got an email yesterday from somebody saying, thank you for your patience, spelt P-A-T-I-E-N-T-S.
Ooh.
I was like, I'm not a doctor. How did this happen that this person is sending an email to me?
Spell check.
Patience. No, you've got it wrong. That's not how you spell it. And that person has gone through our education system. So I'll tell you who has a massive job ahead of us. Sivue Kwarube.
Yeah, no.
Yes, sus.
That is an upper.
I wouldn't want that job. I tell you what, I'm going to send her flowers just because I'm.
Yeah,
feel sorry
no, that one is tough.
I'm worried about whether the school toilets that Dean McPherson is going to build is actually going to be allowed to work.
What do you mean?
I think that there are people who will willfully destroy the infrastructure that's being built in order to generate issues, problems, and create strife and conflict.
Do you think we just can't deal with things working? Like, we just constantly need a problem somewhere.
Because a lot of people are going to say, who's this minister? He doesn't know me. He's not from here. He's built this toilet for me.
You know what? I was talking to a friend of mine this weekend, and I had the conversation with him about how there are actually only two kinds of people in the world. There are citizens and there are barbarians. Like, that's all. You got those two options. You can decide, am I a citizen? Am I someone who likes living in civilization? Do I want to be part of going to the moon, developing AI, technology that helps make the world a better place? I want to be able to live in comfort and be able to have safety and let my children grow up in a world where they won't be, you know, traded as sex slaves. I want to have basic civilized conditions around me. Then you're a citizen. And the only other kind of thing you can be is a barbarian, where the law of the jungle applies, might is right, everything is just this wild, dangerous world where you have to fight for everything that you get, and your win is someone else's loss.
I don't
see how it's very tough to decide which one you are, but I think that's what it comes down to. And it's going to become much clearer to us in South Africa in the next couple of years who the barbarians are and who the civilized people are.
Yeah.
And it does not matter if you're rich or poor. It does not matter if you're black, white. Doesn't matter if you are old or young. Anyone can be a citizen and anyone can be a barbarian.
Yeah. And it usually works out that the barbarians live next door to the citizens.
Oh, yeah. And you know what they used to do? They used to keep them out.
Yeah.
Keep the barbarians out. And unfortunately, what we've started to do is we've started to think that barbarians and civilized people can live next to each other. And that would be fine if they were all civilized, but they're not. Barbarians will come and steal your stuff while you sleep.
Yeah. Like, do you guys think the TRC kind of set us in this trajectory? Why? Let me explain why I'm asking. Because we went through hell on earth. People were told to forgive. And now it seems as if that nature of forgiveness just keeps on rolling over, like one administration to the next. Like, he gave it his best shot. Let's forgive.
No, okay.
Next one, forgive.
I want Jack to have a full go at this because he's a very thoughtful guy. But we can't go and try and rewrite history. History's done.
Sure.
And I think the people at the time did the best they could. You know, people go and they say Mandela was a sellout, and
that's stupid.
FW was the most dangerous man ever, and he never said sorry enough. And we weren't there. And if you were alive at the time, you saw people who were trying their damnedest. Yeah. They really were. Mm. And of course they made mistakes and maybe it wasn't perfect. And with the benefit of hindsight, of course, everybody today thinks they could do a better job, but I promise you they couldn't.
Yeah. No,
there was a lot that was going on.
A lot of things.
That was unspoken, unwritten. Those guys did the best they could. And you can't go back and change it. All we can do is try to operate as well as possible from now. So to be obsessed, and I love history, don't get me wrong. I love history. But if you're going to study history, you very quickly realize you can't rewrite it. Mm. And there's only so much that can be done with the information that they had at the time. I don't think the TRC was a mistake. I think the TRC was a grand gesture that very few countries in the world have been able to pull off in the modern era. It was an opportunity for people who'd done terrible things to come forward and admit to them and apologize to the people who they'd hurt. Sometimes they would pay a price too in terms of going to jail, and there were criminal charges that were brought up, but sometimes they were forgiven. Mm. And we have to have a path to redemption for bad people. And for the good people, it was a chance for them to be acknowledged as being morally superior and a chance for them to say, we did the right thing, we were the good guys, and now we've got to move on as a country. We're going to put our shoulders to the grindstone and keep doing good. And for the bad ones, you've had your chance now. If you didn't apologize, we're coming for you. Mm. I mean, there was a lot about that that was quite revolutionary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a bad thing. What do you think, Jack?
No. It was a necessary thing. The people who were involved in that process had actually physically experienced the abuse, the horrors, the deprivation, the prejudice of apartheid. They decided on the process of what TRC meant. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they were the ones who introduced the idea of reconciliation, forgiveness. And it's only the people afterwards who came and they said, we don't believe in this forgiveness story. But they hadn't been the ones to introduce it.
That's a good point. They came up with it.
Yeah. Mm. So when you have people, leaders like Mandela, who talk about forgiveness, reconciliation, you know that he's thought about it hard. Mm. You know that he's been through the darkest depths of his soul before he came up with that as a solution.
Right.
Before he even articulated it.
The Arch, so, Alex Berain.
Yes. Yeah. Those were the people who lived through it, and they arrived at that conclusion. And other people arrived later on the scene, and they're looking at that conclusion, and they're saying, but that doesn't suit me. It's not for it to suit you. Mm. It's for you to accept by the wisdom of the people who had been through that process that this is the right conclusion. It's for you to embrace it and not doubt it. Now, what for me has become troubling is that the TRC, because it... There were elements of the TRC that failed, including the parts of the compensation that should have been paid to the victims who came out and they were identified, and there was an amount of money that should have been paid and apportioned to certain victims. Now, a lot of those victims were not paid. That process is still unfolding,
30 years later.
30 years later, they're still being paid. So what does it tell you? It gives you the sense that even that process, as meaningful as it was, became another lever. It became a tool to be used. And people started to feel as if they were victims of this TRC process that they were never involved in. In the same way, when people start talking about BEE and transformation, it's very difficult to get somebody to explain what it is. Mm-hmm. Because again, it's simply being used in many instances as a tool, as a lever to effect an outcome without getting people's buy-in first, and without you fully describing what it means.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask both of you, because we're running out of time here, and I want us to end on a controversial note. Do you think that the Secret Service in America should have female agents as bodyguards and protection officers?
I don't think any Secret Service anywhere should have women as bodyguards. Nowhere. Because, look, man, there's just biological differences between men and women. And truthfully, if it's not broken, don't fix it. For years, men have had that position. And you know.
But it's unfair. Been... What about equality?
Yeah. No, man, stop.
What about
stop.
Equity?
No.
What about it. Diversity and inclusion?
Stop. The problem is this, ne?
What about diversity and inclusion?
Stop it. You see, that tantrum you're throwing is the reason why we can't do this thing, man. Here's what I'm saying. It's shocking to me that someone can spot someone taller, shorter, and those two people are the exact same age, but they'll still harp on about equality. It's like, guys, we're just not equal.
What do you know about the duties of a Secret Service agent?
They are essentially there to gather intelligence to protect the person that occupies the highest office in the land. So they gather intelligence. They're there for physical protection. They're there to make sure that the president, the leader of the country, gets to and from where they need to get to.
How do you gather intelligence?
No, a variety of ways. You keep your ear on the ground and all of that good stuff.
That's right. And you can also, you know, insert yourself into certain terror cells and things like that. Are terrorists only men?
No.
Okay. Yeah, we're getting closer to it then. So it's possible that a woman Secret Service agent who has the duty of collecting information could be in a position, a better position than a guy, to harvest information that may be necessary for an investigation and to actually stop an attack.
Okay. Good. So, for argument's sake, we are driving around a place that is like closely, it's close to a cliff.
Yeah.
Something goes wrong. The car tips over. The president is hanging outside the window with one hand.
Yes.
You watch too many movies with Jack and I'm
it's a great cliffhanger, though. I'm like,
you know what I mean? So, who's going to pull the president back into the car? Gathering information, sure. I've got no problem with women doing that and all of that stuff.
Okay.
But there's a physical component that we can't run away from.
Exactly.
What happens then?
Yeah, well, then you're talking about tools for the job, right?
Yeah.
So in one sense, you're talking about the stronger, fitter person that's going to hold the president from the edge of the cliff.
Yeah. I think the reason I brought this up is not just so that we can have a go at the dismal performance of these Secret Service agents. And really, the women were here. You could hear them on the recording going, "What do we do now? What do we do now?" Which is probably an appropriate and very stereotypical response. I'm going to be the first to admit that it's probably just a stereotype in many situations.
Sure.
But there are things that men and women do differently.
Mm.
I think when you talk about the intelligence gathering stuff, the fact that there are, you know, women have an intuition about things which men do not, that could be very valuable in some situations. I don't think that there's a straightforward answer to this.
Yeah, there is.
But I know that the answer isn't diversity and equity and inclusion. No. I know that's bullshit. And I think that's being proven time and time again. The other thing was that one, the fat officer, who's now getting a lot of heat on social media. I saw Warris tweeting, yes, that one, the fat one. She ducked down like this when the bullets started flying, where a bunch of others jumped on Trump. And there might have been women in there as well. I don't know whether it's a straightforward answer, but I do know for sure that it requires a lot more than some government top-down policy.
Mm. Yeah.
If anything, your best people should come from the bottom to the top, right? And they should be selected for all of their skills.
I just think people need to be put in positions where they can best be of service to the people around them, right? And as you pointed out, gathering intelligence and all of that stuff could be the position whereby women do their best work. And I've got no problem with that. It's just when it comes to the physical aspect of things.
Yes.
I think men are just better suited for those positions. Be part of the Secret Service if you want to.
Well, you've just ruined at least half of the possible dates that you were going to have.
I am okay.
Those girls are completely pissed off and put off.
Jack gets his Secret Services anyway.
There we go. I like it. So, Jack Devnarain, it's so nice to see you. I know we've run out
of
time.
You,
it doesn't feel like we spent an hour. It feels like we spent all of two seconds with you this morning.
Mm.
Keep doing the amazing work that you're doing for actors, because God knows I'm not going to. And
thank goodness.
And listen, keep us informed. Anytime you want to come on the show, you're always welcome.
I'd love that. Thank you so
much. Lovely to have you here. Great. Even though you'll have to wake up early.
Yeah.
Just make it a little later, guys.
No, we do this show live.
12:30 is perfect for me.
And Jack Motlanthe, thank you, sir. We will see you in a week's time.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Magic. Have a good day, everybody. Keep warm and let us know if anything exciting happens that you want us to talk about on the show. See you Friday morning or tomorrow on the podcast party on Burning Platform with Pumi Mashiho. Friday, back here at The Real Network with Simpiwe and Ben and so much more.